Blog Talk Radio.
I want all privately owned radios to be immediately impounded.
Yes, sir.
Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Kansas.
Well, there is such a place, Toto.
There must be.
Not a place you can get to by a boat or a train. Far, far away. Behind the moon. Beyond the rain.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have an announcement.
I can no longer sit back and allow the conspiracy to sap and impurify all of our precious bodily fluids.
Let's talk about
creeping like a communist. It's knocking at our doors, voraciously devouring the way things are today. Savagely deflowering the
official story.
Radio Free Kansas.
Madness.
Radio Free Kansas.
Madness.
Why should you put your hands, G.I.?
Now, why don't you just take it easy? Please make me a drink of grain alcohol and rainwater and help yourself to whatever you'd like.
Radio Free Kansas out of North Jefferson County, Kansas.
Kansas.
Ear to the ground, voice in the air worldwide.
Well, that's it, boys. I've been redeemed.
Radio Free Kansas.
Done washed away all my sins and transgressions.
You can listen in.
Welcome to Regular Sunday, Radio Free Kansas. A new voice today, new studio technician. We want to first apologize to all our longtime listeners who've been a little discouraged. We've had some studio issues, but we are proud and pleased to announce today that major innovations and investments in your sound pleasure are currently. We now have a blue studio microphone. Please ignore the background noises as we learn how to adjust our sounds here. And since we're in a government shutdown here, we've decided not to work right now either, since we're not getting paid. And so a little humor is in order to start off our secular Sunday with this pleasant. We're going to start off with a little George Carlin here for a half an hour, just to give you a pleasant little chug drinking afternoon.
Welcome to New World Notes, edited by Kenneth Doust. This week, late in his life, comedian George Carlin reflects on America, on bull, and on why a change is probably not a-gonna come, at least not a change for the better. We'll hear some Carlin routines, an interview, and a very Carlin-like song by David Rovix. I hope you'll stay tuned. 2 weeks ago, an article in our local newspaper just begged to be clipped and saved. The headline reads, Two Men Charged in Fight at Comedy Club. The May 4th brawl at the Funny Bone Comedy Club in Manchester led to criminal charges of assault, breach of peace, and interfering with an officer. Further proof that comedy is not funny. Proof presented just in time for George Carlin's birthday, which was May 12th, originally in the year 1937. Actually, Carlin thought that comedy should be funny. He began his career as a stand-up comedian in the 1960s. He was funny from then to his dying day, which was 5 years ago on June 22nd, 2008. In his early years, he was just another clever stand-up comic, amusing and eminently forgettable. But in the 1970s and onwards, he began making jokes in order to make serious, hard-hitting social and cultural criticism, and hard-hitting political criticism of American militarism, imperialism, and the plunder of unrestrained corporate capitalism running amok. I love his scathing satire from the 1990s, say his spot-on denunciation of George Herbert Walker Bush and his Gulf War I. Carlin described this war as a big male genital-waving contest. Well, that wasn't the exact phrase he used, but that was the gist of it. In 2008, Carlin was an old man, only 71, but with heart disease. He knew he would soon die, and he refused to BS about it. Least of all, BS himself. By then, his comedy had become less angry, more resigned. He still believed that America was rapidly going to hell in a handbasket, and was determined to take the rest of the world down with it. Deep down inside, a satirist feels that he might be able to reform human vice and folly if he denounces it well enough. That wish never goes away. But in his last years, Carlin came to believe that adequate change will never happen. As America marches off to hell, the best you can do is pull up a chair and enjoy watching the parade go by. George Carlin died in June 2008, just as the global capitalist financial system began to collapse. In a way, I'm sorry Carlin missed it. It would have shown him he was right. But I think being proved right was not what he wanted. I think what he really wanted was hope. He had rejected all organized religion as a child and never went back. So no hope was available from that supplier. And he didn't find much of it in the secular world either. Carlin was lucky in one way. He died before he saw a slick politician turn hope into an empty campaign slogan. A politician who promised hope and then delivered despair. Carlin was dying anyway, but that would have killed him. Yearning for hope and not finding it. Can you relate to that? I sure can. Well, enough prologue. Let's hear some comedy, if that's the right word for it. Here's George Carlin in his last year, 2008, talking about America, talking about BS, and talking about why the two together make such a bad combination.
Tell the truth, don't be bullshit, people. Like I say, there's enough bullshit as it is. There's enough bullshit as it is. In fact, there's just enough. Did you know that? There's just enough bullshit to hold things together in this country. Bullshit is the glue that binds us as a nation. Where would we be without our safe, familiar American bullshit? Land of the free, home of the brave, the American dream. All men are equal, justice is blind, the press is free. Your vote counts. Business is honest, the good guys win. The police are on your side. God is watching you. Your standard of living will never decline. And everything is going to be just fine. The official national bullshit story. I call it the American okey-doke. Every one of those items is provably untrue at one level or another, but we believe them because they're pounded into our heads from the time we're children. That's what they do with that kind of thing. Pounded into the heads of kids because they know the children are much too young to be able to muster an intellectual defense against a sophisticated idea like that. And they know that up to a certain age, children believe everything their parents tell them. And as a result, they never learn to question things. Nobody questions things in this country anymore. Nobody questions anything. Everybody's too fat and happy. Everybody's got a cell phone that'll make pancakes and rub their way too prosperous for our own good. Way too prosperous. Americans have been bought off and silenced by toys and gizmos, and no one learns to question things. You remember? Now, okay. You remember Barbara Bush? I call her the silver douchebag. You remember her? Okay. Barbara Bush. She is the mother of Governor George Bush. I call him Governor Bush because that's the only elected office he ever held legally in our country, okay? George Bush, Governor Bush. Yeah. I don't care where they hang his portrait. I don't care how big his library is. He'll always be Governor Bush. I don't even capitalize his name when I type it anymore. So she's the mother of Governor George Bush. She's also the wife of his father, George H.W. Bush, who did become president in a normal, legal, traditional manner. And when he did, she came along for the ride as first lady. And that's been the tradition up till now. A man has been elected, and the woman has come along for the ride as the first lady. And usually, as in American life in general, the woman is condescended to, patronized, given something to do to keep her busy. A lot of times they give her a charity or a cause, something she can champion. Betty Ford was told to drink. Remember that? Yeah. Yeah, that was Betty Ford's assignment. Betty, you get drunk and get totally fallen down face drunk, okay? You just get drunk and we'll hose you down, baby. We'll hose you down. We'll put you in a facility. You'll get sober, and then we'll put your name in the facility. Liza Minnelli can get sober and everything's going to be okay, right? That was her assignment. Barbara Bush's assignment was getting children to read. Remember that? Getting children to read. They figured she had had so much success with George. That she would be a natural to get children to read, which misses the point completely. Not important to get children to read. Children who want to read are going to read. Kids who want to learn to read are going to learn to read. Much more important to teach children to question what they read. Children should be taught to question everything, to question everything they read, everything they hear. Children should be taught to question authority. Parents never teach their children to question authority because parents are authority figures themselves, and they don't want to undermine their own bullshit inside the household. So they stroke the kid, and the kid strokes them, and they all stroke each other, and they all grow up all f***ed up, and they come to shows like this. Kids have to be warned that there's bullshit coming down the road. That's the biggest thing you can do for a kid. Tell them what life in this country is about. It's about a whole lot of bullshit that needs to be detected and avoided. That's the best thing you can do. No one told me. No one told me a thing like that. I was never warned about any of this. Had to find all of it out for myself. And there are still, as with you probably, a lot of things that you're expected to believe and accept in America that I personally have a problem with, and I question a lot of these things. Now, here's another slogan. Here's another slogan you run into all the time. God bless America. Once again, respectfully, I say to myself, what the f*** does that mean? God bless America? Is that a request? Is that a demand? Is that a suggestion? Politicians say it at the end of every speech, as if it were some sort of verbal tic that they can't get rid of. God bless you and God bless America. God bless you and God bless America. I guess they figure if they leave it out, someone's going to think they're bad Americans. Let me tell you a little secret about God, folks. God does not give a flying f*** about America, okay? He doesn't care. He never cared about this country. He never has. He never will. He doesn't care about this country any more than he cares about Mongolia, Transylvania, Pittsburgh, the Suez Canal, or the North Pole. He simply doesn't care, okay? He doesn't care. Listen. Hey, there are 200 countries in the world now. Do these people honestly think that God is sitting around picking out his favorite? Why would he do that? Why would God have a favorite country? And why would it be America out of all the countries? Because we have the most money? Because he likes our national anthem? Maybe it's because he heard we have 18 delicious flavors of classic rice-a-roni. It's delusional thinking. It's delusional thinking. And Americans are not alone with these sort of delusions. Military cemeteries around the world are packed with brainwashed, dead soldiers who were convinced God was on their side. America prays for God to destroy our enemies. Our enemies pray for God to destroy us. Somebody's going to be disappointed. Somebody's wasting their time. Could it be everyone? If people want to say God bless America, that's their business, I don't care. But here's what I don't understand. If they say God bless America, presumably they believe in God. And if they do, they must have heard God loved everyone. That's what he said. He loved everyone and he loved them equally. So why would these people ask God to do something that went against his own teachings? You know what these God Bless America people ought to do? They ought to check with that Jesus fellow they're so crazy about. They're always talking about what would Jesus do? What would Jesus do? They don't want to know so they can do it. They just want to know so they can tell other people to do it. Well, I'll tell you what Jesus would have done. I'll tell you what Jesus would have done. He would have got up on the top of the Empire State Building and said, God bless everyone around the world forever and ever till the end of time. That's what Jesus would have done, and that's what these people should do, or else they should admit that God Bless America is really just some sort of an empty slogan with no real meaning except for something vague like, good luck. Good luck, America. You're on your own, which is a little bit closer to the truth.
But I was thinking, when they're always blessing America, which aspects exactly? Like just anything, or is it just, or is it, are we blessing certain things? I thought I'd just be more sort of ecumenical about what we're blessing here. God bless all the Indians living in their reservations. God bless all the strippers and their bodily gyrations. God bless Trump Tower reaching up so high. God bless the blue angels screaming through the sky. God bless Appalachia, mountains and moonshine. God bless the creeks, bulldozers and strip mines. God bless the mega churches and all those who speak in tongues. God bless the corporate ladder, every single rung. God bless the homeless families living under bridges. God bless the golden valleys and the mountain ridges. God bless the beaches and the swamps and the alligators. God bless the NFL and the Oakland Raiders. God bless the USA. God bless the conspiracy theorists and the Jewish bankers. God bless ExxonMobil and all their oil tankers. God bless Clear Channel, Toby Keith and Taylor Swift. God bless anorexia, liposuction and facelifts. God bless the mighty rivers and the nuclear reactors. God bless Fox, Rupert Murdoch and X Factor. God bless the USA. God bless all the lobbyists and their envelopes of cash. God bless Miley Cyrus and her birthday bash. God bless the president and his very moving speeches. God bless Idaho's potatoes and Georgia's peaches. God bless Florida oranges and Wisconsin cheese. God bless the internment camps and penitentiaries. God bless the youth. Wyoming's rolling fields of hay. God bless high school massacres and the NRA. God bless each member of the Congress and all the oil billionaires. God bless sodium thiopental and electric chairs. God bless the open highways and the traffic jams. God bless the Patriot missiles and in boxes full of spam. God bless the USA. God bless the redwood forests and the paper mills. God bless the plastic Jesuses sitting on the windowsills. God bless carpet bombing and men in uniform. God bless the firefighters, the cops and Desert Storm. God bless the immigrants and the ICE. God bless the offshore oil rigs from sea to shining sea. God bless the USA.
set was David Rovics, recorded live in Boston this past January. George Carlin's take on God Bless America just demanded another. There's no replacement for George Carlin on hand, but a couple of satirist folk singers are in the same ballpark. David Rovics, whom we just heard, shares Carlin's dark and complex views of politics and society, but he often lacks Carlin's comic humor. Roy Zimmerman has the comic humor, but he lacks Carlin's dark, tragic awareness, especially Carlin's dark awareness that mainstream politics accomplishes nothing good. In fairness to Rovics and Zimmerman, George Carlin lacks the ability to sing and play the guitar well. So, as they say at the end of Some Like It Hot, nobody's perfect. But let's hear more from George Carlin. This is from an interview he gave in late 2007. Here, he reflects on why he gave up on his fellow humans, and on how Americans squandered every benefit they had on both empty religion and on mindless materialism. And he recognizes that inside every cynic is a disappointed idealist. Here's George Carlin.
I gave up on this stuff. I gave up on my species, and I gave up on my fellow Americans. I gave up on my countrymen. Because I think we squandered great gifts. I think humans were given great, great gifts. Walking upright, binocular vision, opposable thumb, large brain, making tools. Make tools, large brain, make better tools. Talk, have to link language. You take this, put in here. We learned language, the brain got bigger, language. We grew. We had great gifts, and we gave it up all up for both men, for both money and God. God and mammon, both. We gave it up to the high priests. It's your job. It's God's will. That's what they say. People say it's God's will. That means God can do anything he wants, so why pray? They say, you pray for something. Okay, he didn't answer my prayers. Well, it's God's will. Well, if it's God's will, why did I even pray in the first place? He's going to do what he wants anyway. We gave it all up to superstition, primitive superstition. Primitive. With invisible man in the sky looking down, keeping track of what we do, make sure we don't do the wrong thing. If we do, he puts us in hell and we burn forever. That kind of is very limiting. It's very limiting for this brain we have. So we keep ourselves limited, and then we want a toy and a gizmo and gold, and we want shiny things, and we want something to plug in that'll make big, big, big things for us. And all that is nothing. It's nothing. We gave it all up. And Americans, who also had great gifts, when you take the theory of democratic rule, self-government, okay, they started off wrong. They owned slaves. They didn't let women vote. They didn't let people who didn't own land vote. Fine. They got off on the wrong foot. But the ideas were good. But we blew that. We polluted it. We polluted it with this stuff, things, material goods, games, gizmos, toys, gadgets, having possessions. He's got a bigger truck. He says, she has truck. It's bigger than mine. I'm getting a new truck. Here's a big truck. Oh, I'm getting that one. That's what you got, a video in it? Your DVD too? He don't have a DVD. I got a DVD, you know. Oh, please.
Whatever happened, and all of that is what happened, you know. And that's why I'm divorced from it now. I see it from a distance. I give myself a divorce. I said, George, emotionally you have no stake in this. You don't care one way or another. So watch it. Have fun. You know what? I say it this way. When you're born in this world, you're given a ticket to the freak show. And when you're born in America, you're given a front row seat. And some of us get to sit there with notebooks. And I'm a notebook guy. Uh-huh. Oh, ooh. Oh my God, did you see that? Did you see what he just... And I watch the freak show, and I get my notes, and I make up stuff about it, and I talk about the freaks, and the freaks are all humans, and they're like me, and they're all the same. We're all the same. I'm not better. I'm not different. I'm just apart now. I'm separate. I'm over here because I put myself out of the mix. I don't have a stake in the outcome. I'm not a cheerleader for a given outcome now. Oh, they say if you scratch a cynic, you'll find a disappointed idealist. And I would admit that somewhere underneath all of this, there's a little flicker of a flame of idealism that would love to see it all whoosh, change. But it can't happen that way. And incremental change, it just seems like the pile is too deep. It seems like there's too much to do. To do it all? to do everything you would need to clean this act up of a human, you know, too much. And there are forces that don't want that. You have big companies, big pharmaceuticals, big oil, big petrochemical, big insurance, big real estate, big agribusiness, all these people feeding, so they don't give a shit about borders anymore. It's all international. It's multinational. There are no borders. This is obsolete. Someday, if we all lasted long enough, someday there'd be no borders. There'd be one language and one currency. That would happen. But we still, you know what Robert Anton Wilson said? Every border in Europe is an arbitrary line where two groups of bandits grew tired of fighting and decided to rest for a while. That's all we are about.
In the little time we have left, let's hear some more of Carlin's last stand-up routines. Here he talks about another problem with the American people, their really bad parenting.
Now, speaking of parents and speaking of bullshit, two ideas which aren't always mutually exclusive, by the way. I'd like to mention a special kind of bullshit that has taken hold in this country in the last 30 to 40 years. It's a form of bullshit that really only can be called child worship. It's child worship. It's this excessive devotion to children. I'm talking about today's professional parents, these obsessive diaper sniffers, who are overscheduling and overmanaging their children and robbing them of their childhoods. Even the simple act of playing. Even the simple act of playing has been taken away from children and put on mommy's schedule in the form of play dates. Something that should be spontaneous and free is now being rigidly planned. When does a kid ever get to sit in the yard with a stick anymore? You know, just sit there with a stick. Do today's kids even know what a stick is? You know? You sit in the yard with a stick and you dig a hole. You know? Yeah. And you look at the hole, and you look at the stick, and you have a little fun. But kids don't have sticks anymore. I don't think there are any sticks left. I think they've all been recalled because of lead paint. Who would have thought that one day the manufacturing of sticks would be outsourced to China? But you know something, a kid shouldn't be wasting his time with a stick anyway. If he's 4 years old, he should be home studying for his kindergarten entrance exams. Do you know about that? Oh, they have them now. Yeah, yeah. There are places that have kindergarten entrance exams. The poor little The poor little he can barely locate his You know, and already he's being pressured to succeed. Pressured to succeed for the sake of the parents. Isn't this really just a sophisticated form of child abuse? And speaking of child abuse, next stop, grade school. Grade school, where he won't be allowed to play tag because it encourages victimization. And he won't be allowed to play dodgeball because it's exclusionary. And it promotes aggression. Standing around is still okay. Standing around is still permitted, but it won't be for long because sooner or later some kid is going to be standing around and his foot will fall asleep and his parents will sue the school and it'll be goodbye standing around. Now, fortunately, all is not lost. All is not lost because at least we know that when he does get to play whatever games he is allowed to play, the child will never lose. We know he'll never lose because in today's America, no child ever loses. There are no losers anymore. Everyone's a winner. No matter what the game or sport or competition, everybody wins. Everybody wins. Everybody gets a trophy. No one is a loser. No child these days ever gets to hear those all-important character-building words, "You lost, Bobby." You lost. You're a loser, Bobby. They miss out on that. You know what they tell a kid who lost these days? You were the last winner.
George Carlin, not long before his death in 2008. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening to New World Notes. Catch the shows you missed at our website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com.
Radio Free Kansas, welcome back on this pleasant Sunday afternoon. Oh, George, we certainly missed George in time with the government shutdown. I can only imagine what he would have to occurring with our politicians posturing. So welcome back to the show. Again, we want to talk to our listeners. We know most of you listeners download our show at your convenience when you have a busy schedule, trying to survive, make money. And that's what we're here to talk about here, just for a few minutes, my family. This is a new voice, Steph from Johnson County. You've not heard me in a long time because I've been deep undercover. Steph off the depths of Johnson County, learning what the successful people are worried about and the troubling with Obamacare. And today we're talking Kristen and her effort on Indiegogo.com to say, acres. We have a goal of $972. You might not like her. That's the exact amount that Kansas is going to charge her for taking her license wrongfully for an expert. We're halfway to our goal. We have contributors coming in constantly. And if you're listening, we want to thank you. And I have a few shout outs. Judith Bindewald, $25. I wish I could read everyone. And Judith, thank you so much for $25. Absolutely fantastic. We're at 975 donators. We want 25 more donators today. 1,000 to easily do it. DG Mark II, $25 2 hours ago. We'll give you a big RFK shout out. Thanks for stopping by. We're saying we're saving the barn, the farm. We have to pay this bill. They're going to lose their farm for all the years of Chris's work if we don't get to our goal. We have a dollar from MS Professora. Daryl Anger, $25 4 hours ago. We love you. Thank you so much, Daryl. It's unbelievable. I have a special guest speaker on the line. Good afternoon. Do I have a caller on the line? Good afternoon. Caller on the line. For those of you listening live today, we would appreciate if you call in to the phone lines today so we can talk about our advancements we're making in our studio. New microphone, egg crate, echoing. Give us some feedback. Let us know. We know we've lost some listeners because of our audio difficulties, and we really think we've hit a milestone today. We're really excited.
Yeah, we are.
In the RFK camp. Yeah. We're going to take it to a new level because the audio concerns, I think, are alleviated. We need some tuning.
Yeah,
some gain adjustments, some mic adjustments, et cetera. But if you could call 646-716-8652, that's 746-716-8652, we would love to have you call. And I think I have a call on the line.
Mm-hmm. She's calling. Yeah. Oh, put him on.
Hello. Do I have a caller?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Hello.
Good afternoon. Do I have a call on the line?
Yes.
Hey, Steph.
Hi, good afternoon. Is this Chris?
It's Chris and Libby.
Welcome to the call. Listen, we were just talking about how excited we are with our microphone adjustments here in the studio here at RFK in northeastern Kansas, shouting out live across the airwaves, across the country, and across the world. And we were just talking about our efforts on Indiegogo to save a few shout-outs. A Judith Bentwall gave $25 just an hour ago. DG Mark II gave $25, and we give a huge, proud shout-out. We have Noah Maurice, who gave $3. No amount is too small. It's the numbers that count. If everyone could give a little, we would appreciate and could continue our efforts. And Chris, I'm so excited you called in.
Oh, hi. Sorry, I was having a little trouble with the phone. No, it sounds really great.
So listen, I'm for our listeners who are listening today and tomorrow when they download this, I'm really excited as a longtime family member to hear a stark rumor that you're going to Hollywood.
Well, maybe. Yeah, it's hard to believe.
I heard there might be a small event where you go maybe hang out with some former Hollywood stars to talk about your farm and talk about the things you've done in your past and talk about politics. It really boils down to politics, doesn't it? Because I don't think anyone has ever hated you.
Well, that would be nice, but probably not quite the case. Anyway, sorry, I just wasn't.
Well, you know, if you do go to Hollywood, you can certainly call me. Oh,
well,
just Carl Brusrick just came in, another $15. Isn't that fantastic? I think the phone lines are just going off the hook this afternoon on a Sunday, on a secular Sunday. There goes another caller. We're going to have to see what that folks do.
It's because they love your voice. You sound great. What is that? The phone's actually ringing.
Those are phones ringing. Yes, Chris, that's a pass for all your efforts in the past.
Sounds like we're on NPR on the fundraiser.
Could we only be on NPR? If they would call us, we would love to be on their shows.
Or
we're going to take a little 3 minutes, adjust some volumes in our studio here. This is a working show today in that we're trying to fine-tune our audio settings. If there are any other listeners out there, if you could dial in and just give us a quick shout. You don't even have to come online. Just talk to us in the back channel and let us know how the audio sounds today. We'd be completely appreciative. We know we've had some frustrated listeners. We know they download our show and check the audio quality. And we're assuring we're going to put our efforts in other areas because the audio has definitely worked out. Chris, we love you. Indiegogo.com, Dr. Newhouse, Save the Farm. We're halfway there. We have 975 beautiful, warm, loving, understanding people who took a little money out of their pocket to help. We want 25 more listeners today in the next hour. Want to get to 1,000 today? We have 13 days left to achieve our goal. So we look forward to it. Chris, we love you.
Hey, Grandpa. You've had a good life. Yes. Panels in the sky. They tried to kill me with their
public concert.
They're gonna kill me. If you boss don't get there first, they wanna kill all the babies and the old people too. Take away my choices, doctor, like the current system too. Big government will tell me what I can and cannot do. I prefer to have free enterprise control my life. Thank you. How do I know this? Did I really check? I'll tell you quick. I'm in a rush. It comes straight from Glen Beck. You may say it's all exaggerated or made up by the Fox Swazee. Just because it's been repudiated by those commies at the AARP. 'Cause I'm a Tea Party American, a true trying to save business and guns from socialistic rot. It's in the Constitution that immigrants must leave. And if your healthcare bankrupts you, I ain't gonna grieve. Cause I got mine back, you lazy bum, get back. I won't let tax time to help some kid who isn't mine. I'm going to a tea party. I'm going to a tea party. I'm going to a tea party. I'm gonna say to hell karma, party down with Big Pharma, yeah. Those Nazis in the White House are preparing for the crimes. I read all about it in the Washington Times. Obama's just like Hitler, draw a mustache, you'll see. He wants to give the lazy poor my flat panel TV. Okay, he's not yet killing Jews unless they're very old. But he's still a Muslim, he hates Jews, so I'm told and I can tell. Because my eye for detail does not fail to win. One time he went to Egypt and not to Israel. That's it! Oh yeah. We need the GOP back, they're real Americans. They never did anything to hurt anyone of their class. Mark my words, this gang of White House Reds put our country in a red. Oh wait, somebody beat them to it. Oi, our ass is crap.
I got mine, Jack. You lazy bum, get back.
I won't let tax climb. Tell some kid who isn't mine. I'm going to a tea party. I'm going to a tea party. I'm going to a tea party. We'll all be equal in that place. Me and my good old boys from J.P. Morgan Chase. Okay, it's true that all of this is false. But an administration that supports abortion naturally will eventually support death panels. And if they support a public option, they'll inevitably abolish free enterprise. And if they disagree with me, they will undoubtedly put me in jail, where I will continue to fight against big government with one difference. I'll have health care. Cause I got mine, Jack.
Okay, we're back here in Radio Free Kansas on our Secular Sunday. And now for the listeners who have indulged us in our audio, we're going to regular Sunday programming. We're going to go over to the point of inquiry, listen to a little Tim Mooney discussing the intricacies of the Republican brain. The next 12 to stimulate you.
For tonight's Conversations with Great Minds, I'm joined by Chris Mooney. Chris is a science and political journalist and blogger and an experienced trainer of scientists in the art of communication. He works for the National Science Foundation to train scientists to better communicate their research and blogs regularly for Science Progress, a website of the Center for American Progress. Chris has been a visiting associate in the Center for Collaborative History at Princeton University, a Knight Science Journalism Fellow at MIT, and a Templeton Cambridge Fellow in Science and Religion. He's a graduate of Yale University and the author of several books, including his latest, The Republican Brain, The Science of Why They Deny Science and Reality. Chris joins me now in the studio. Chris, great to see you.
Good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. One of the most interesting things, throughout my life, I've noticed that, all the way back to my dirty hippie days, I've noticed that the Republicans always seem clean-cut, and their house is usually really, really neat, and the Democrats are, you know, the old SDS people, you know, were the dirty hippies.
Exactly.
Is there, like, a brain-wiring explanation for that?
It's a personality trait. Okay. What you're tapping into is one of the big five personality traits that differ liberals from conservatives. It's called conscientiousness. And it doesn't mean, you know, just being ethical. It means actually liking order and structure in your life. And I think that goes all the way down to sort of being more clean cut versus being sort of over the place.
It's interesting. You know, one of the characteristics of children who have experienced abuse or trauma in their childhood, you know, a parent who dies or right now, one of the things we're seeing, you know, 2 million kids have been in homes that were foreclosed on. Mm-hmm. And one of the consequences of that is that they, as adults, are total control freaks and constantly try to organize the environment around them. And it's a way of trying to get back some sense of safety. Is that the kind of thing that you're talking about? This might be a psychological nuance, or is this more neurological?
I think we all have this trait to a varying degree. I think of it as a knob. okay, and we're all turned up. I'm actually turned up pretty high on this trait. This trait tends towards more conservatism. But, you know, liberals can have it. I have liberals have their traits, too, that tend toward more liberal, like openness to experience. I actually am a liberal who's high open, high conscientiousness. What does that make you? It turns out to make you a liberal in my case. So it's complicated. Yeah. But we can measure the differences in political views based on differences in personalities.
So you said that there are these big five. What are they?
Openness to new experience, wanting to try new things, including new ideas. Conscientiousness, order and structure in your life. Agreeableness, politeness, empathy. Extroversion, introversion. That's one of the big ones. And then neuroticism, or the lack thereof.
Okay, so let's go through those one at a time. Actually, I'd like to jump, we'll come back to some of the other ones, but I'd like to go to the extroversion, introversion. Yeah. Do you mean in the classic Jungian sense, you know, Carl Jung's notion was that extroverts are people who identify themselves or define themselves mm-hmm. by their perception of other people's perception of them. So they're constantly looking for other people to tell them who they are, whereas introverts are people who define themselves internally.
To some extent, yeah.
I mean, kind of the Myers-Briggs these days.
Yeah, I mean, so the Big Five, Myers-Briggs, these are some of the popular ones. The Big Five is, I think, really scientifically established in psychology now. Extroverts tend to have more friends, you know, they're the life of the party. They don't feel awkward in a room where they don't know lots of people. There's only a slight political difference in this one, and conservatives tend a little bit toward more extroversion in some of the research that I've seen.
And liberals are more introverted.
A little more, yeah. It's not one of the big differences.
You know, I've always described myself as an introvert who knows how to pretend he's an extrovert. I do media, I've done it most of my life, but basically I'm a shy person. And
same here.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Let's go through the list. The first was
openness. Openness to experiences, and this is the one that I make the biggest deal about in the book because it really, really divides people politically. I mean, if you want a strong prediction of liberalism, try openness. Openness is wanting to try new things, new ideas, traveling to new places, but it also has to do with, you know, comfort with abstract ideas, being artistic, being creative, being curious. All of these go along with openness.
So the flip side of openness is
closedness. Yes, essentially. And there's traits that go along with it or don't go along with it, like need for closure, need for cognitive closure. There's a big research program at the University of Maryland in this. And so if you're closed, you want to have a fixed belief, a fixed view, and you limit your information search to find enough information to support your view, and then that's okay. You know, no thank you, no more. So
one of the things that I've noticed from 9 years now, I've been doing a progressive talk radio show, and so I'm interacting with people 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for 9 years, is that on both sides, there is this sense of this is who we are, this is what we're about. I mean, I've commented on this, it seems like the main reasons why people listen to political talk radio are to validate their worldview and get the talking points that they need to be able to win the water cooler wars. And not to be challenged so much, although I try to bring conservatives on my show constantly to challenge, but in a way it's doing those two things. How is that different on the right and the left? Because I'm certainly seeing it on the left as well.
I think that what you're talking about is now selective exposure to information sources, and there's a lot of political science and political psychology research on this. And it's clear that everybody does this. Okay, we organize the information we consume based upon things that we like. It's very natural, and it isn't just political. You know, but that said, there are some studies that suggest that a certain kind of conservative, called an authoritarian conservative, engages in more selective exposure. And so there are several papers, and in the book I actually lay those out, and I say, okay, you know, we've only tested them in a couple of circumstances, but they are doing more selective exposure in these studies.
These are the people, I forget who wrote the book, The Authoritarians.
That's Robert Altmaier, he's a psychologist.
Yeah. And then John Dean actually wrote a book based on that.
They actually measure it differently now in a lot of cases than they measured it. And actually now it's a simpler kind of question where they just ask about child-rearing styles. And authoritarians tend to want children who are obedient.
Sure.
And, you know, non-authoritarians, the extreme opposite. I'm a very non-authoritarian person.
Right.
They want children who are creative. So that act turns out to be a giant political divide right there.
And politically, in the book The Authoritarians and in Dean's book, they both talked about how there are authoritarian leaders who are demanding obedience, and then there are authoritarian followers who are demanding leaders, who want leaders to tell them what to do.
Right.
And that seems to be something that is predominantly on the right.
Indeed.
So on the left, do we predominantly have incoherent leaders or kind of all over the place,
yeah.
And incoherent is the wrong word, but
we're not as obedient.
Lacking.
I think that would be fair to say. And in some ways it hurts us, right? Because if our style of communicating to people who don't agree with us is kind of wishy-washy and disorganized, they're looking for sometimes for really direct, really decisive people who seem sure of themselves.
Right.
And sometimes liberals don't come off that way. A lot of times liberals don't come off that way.
Well,
yeah.
I think a lot of liberals, if you're open to new experience, by definition, you're not certain of everything.
It sounds weird to us when someone comes off that way. I mean, I remember when I was really starting to write about politics, watching George W. Bush and Al Gore presidential debates. And there, the style was so incredibly different. And if you're open, Gore's got all this nuance, and he's so informed about all the details of the bills.
Right.
And Bush is just sort of very, very decisive and confident. And America split. I was always amazed that anyone could watch those debates and see a different Bush than I saw, but I didn't know anything about psychology and personality. And now it makes perfect sense that we bifurcate that way.
Well, it makes perfect sense
for
the 20 or 30% who identify themselves as liberal or conservative, Democratic, Republican.
Mm-hmm.
What about the 30 or 40% who identify themselves as independents and who
mm-hmm.
actually do swing back and forth, you know, who voted for Lyndon Johnson and then voted for Ronald Reagan,
mm-hmm.
For example?
So there's a bunch of different people in there, and there are both people who just don't know much about politics. So if you're not informed a lot about politics, you probably don't know really what you are. But you could be psychologically a strong liberal, but you haven't, you know, gotten engaged with the issues in a way that activates you so that you get emotionally connected to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of those people might actually fit on the polls, but they just haven't gotten there.
So these are the people that are constantly calling into my show saying, I always thought I was a conservative, I always voted Republican, I've been listening to your show for a year, and I know that I'm a progressive Democrat.
Yeah.
They really were all along.
Mm-hmm.
They just never heard the talking points.
But there's also probably some real moderates who are really blended, in a sense, and they have liberal and conservative attributes in some kind of mix. And there's probably a lot of people like that.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was openness.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second was the cleanliness. What was the word you used?
Conscientiousness. Right, the big five, and conscientiousness is clearly predicts conservatism, although not quite as strongly as openness predicts liberalism.
Right, and then the next one was?
Agreeableness. And that one's really interesting. There's one psychology paper that breaks agreeableness into different components,
mm-hmm.
and one of the components is politeness, and one of them is empathy. And it turns out that when they broke it up, you got conservatives doing better on politeness and liberals doing better on empathy. But when you didn't break it up, you ended up having not a big difference on agreeableness.
When you broke what up?
Broke agreeableness into the components, politeness and empathy. Then you saw conservatives being more polite, liberals being more empathetic.
Well, being more polite is more conforming to the conventions of society.
Right.
And but empathy doesn't seem like that.
It's a key liberal emotion. Yeah.
But not for conservatives?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm not saying they don't have empathy. I'm saying that they're just not scoring quite as high on the questions that are designed to test empathy.
So basically what this is providing, and then extroversion, introversion, and then the fifth one.
That's neuroticism or the lack thereof. Stability versus neuroticism. And on one of the big studies, this was actually quite striking. It was about 14,000 people done by political scientists at Yale. Just what are your political beliefs, how do you identify, and what are your personality traits? Conservatives were doing better on stability, actually. Yeah. So,
yeah, because they're certain of the world.
Yeah.
You would think.
Well, it's an advantage because neuroticism is certainly taken far. You know, you're worrying all the time about
it. Woody Allen is the archetype, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
The difference between college-educated Republicans and non-college-educated Republicans on global warming. We just have a minute before the break.
Sure,
if we could throw this maybe we can start this conversation. Here we have college graduates who believe that global warming is happening because of human activity.
Uh-huh.
And
non-college.
Yeah, and non-college. Let's just look at the Republicans first, 19% versus 31%. Why?
This is the figure that got me started on this whole quest. This is 2008. So, amazingly, if you're a Republican, the higher your level of education, the less likely you are to believe in global warming,
right?
Whereas if you're a Democrat or an independent, the opposite's the case. So what's going on there? I mean, these people are probably more attuned to politics because they're more educated, so you're partly detecting that. But I say I want to go into the Republican brain to understand this kind of effect. How can they so distrust? And part of it is, you know, the people at universities that they distrust are all these open people, you know? And so
let's dig into this a little deeper.
Yeah.
We'll do this right after the break. More conversations with great minds with Chris Mooney right after this break.
Welcome back to Conversations with Great Minds with Chris Mooney. He's a graduate of Yale University and the author of several books, including his latest, The Republican Brain, The Science of Why They Deny Science and Reality. Let's get back to it. If we could bring this graphic back up here into the plasma. We started with this question of why is it that Republicans, that the more well-educated a Republican is, but you
sure.
Restated. Okay.
The higher explain. Level education is a Republican, and many studies have found this, the less likely you are to accept the science of global warming, which is essentially scientific reality. You're rejecting it. So why? And I call the people over here the educated Republicans who reject it smart idiots. Because it's clearly, it's not that they are not knowledgeable, and it's not that they're not educated. Something else going on. So what is that? Well, it's probably many things, right? It's probably paying attention to conservative news and opinion, Fox News, getting that kind of information. That'll make you doubt it. It's probably skepticism.
So may I interrupt with a question? That's a subset of the whole thing of selective data.
Yeah, selective exposure. Okay, they're probably selectively exposing the data. They've learned to distrust academia, because the conservative movement has been attacking academia for a long time. So they don't have trust in scientists the way liberals do.
Right.
But these are more environmental factors that are part of the political ecosystem we live in. But I think there's also psychology here. And so I talk in the book about how Republicans on average tend to be less open, tend to have more fixed beliefs, more need for closure. And I think that that's also involved as well.
Sure. Why would they attack academia?
Oh gosh, it's been the story of the conservative movement, basically. The idea is, and Rick Santorum said this a lot, the idea is that somehow little Johnny goes off to college and, you know, starts to grow his hair long and gets brainwashed and comes back, you know, not believing in God anymore.
Right.
It doesn't actually really work like that. All the research shows that academia, it's more like people select in to academia who are already sort of open people.
Right.
Rather than it being a brainwashing factory.
The kind of person who wants to be a college professor, who wants to work in that environment for the rest of their lives is probably more progressive.
So they're right that universities are liberal because they're a haven for people who are open to experience, but they're wrong that brainwashing is going on. It's probably people selecting, this sounds like the great place for them, just like conservatives are selecting into business.
Right.
You know.
But
yeah.
Is there a generative component? You've got a machine, a liberal or a conservative machine that attacks academia, and then academia, and then you've also got conservatives who are distrustful of academia.
Mm-hmm.
Which came first?
That's a good question.
Can they exist independent of each other? I mean, is the attack on academia maybe just completely unnecessary for conservatives to distrust academia and thus distrust facts? And it's just kind of thrown in as savoriers.
You know, it's really hard to say which came first, because I'd have to go back and think about the beginning of modern conservatism in America and figure out, you know, I think
You go back to Edmund Burke.
Yeah, right, yeah. But Spiro Agnew was you know, attacking universities, for example. There's just a long history of it. I think it probably feels natural, you know, because you've defined yourself your whole life as either one of them or not one of them. You know, and we all do this. I defined myself my whole life as a kind of person who wanted to go off to college. I mean, that was kind of crucial, you know, and wanted to stay, and increasingly, you know, sort of felt like that was a nice place to be. So I think you kind of feel it. I think you kind of feel it on the left and on the right.
Yeah. Belief in facts.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been kind of dancing around this, actually, and let's just, now that we've laid the table.
Yeah.
Get right into it. Why is it that Republicans, we're talking about the Republican brain here, that Republicans don't believe things that are right in front of them? And to what extent might liberals be afflicted with the same condition?
So both sides are capable of bias, no doubt about that.
Right.
But this is really why I did this project, is, you know, I wrote the book The Republican War on Science, and I tried to use rational arguments to refute misinformation. Didn't work. So coming back,
Republicans read your book and said,
"Yeah,
you know.
Come on." But I was naive in thinking that would work. So I think you look at openness and you look at the traits that go along with openness. You know, the opposite of openness is authoritarianism. You know, wanting to defend your beliefs is really part of that, and not really being tolerant of uncertainty and ambiguity is part of that. Whereas the open personality is more tolerant of these. I mean, science is shot through with ambiguity. Shot through with uncertainty, as is scholarship.
It's the nature of science.
It's the very nature.
You never say, I mean,
yeah.
okay, this pen just dropped. Yeah. We don't know why, right? I mean, well, gravity's been around since what's his name, but we're still debating. Are they springs?
Isaac, yes.
Are they, yeah, it's Isaac Newton. Are they, you know?
Well, yeah, exactly what is going on there. Exactly. And you know, so when scientists sort of express their views about the science of global warming, which they'll do with all these caveats, saying, you know, it's likely that humans are causing most of the warming, it's very likely that most of the warming, I mean, that doesn't sound very convinced. And but the scientists, that's like, wow, we're very likely, we're never very likely, this is a big deal. But so I think the two sides are perceiving uncertainty differently. I think that's a key part of it.
Well, and yeah. And this gets exploited by people who have an agenda.
Oh, sure.
I mean, you get these think tanks that are funded by big oil and by, you know, companies, billionaires who own companies that do a lot of pollution, like the Koch brothers. And the think tanks put the front people out there to come on programs like mine and say, oh, but this scientist in East Anglia University said,
right,
it's only probable, you know, or possible.
Yeah.
As you said, and then that feeds so which takes us back to the question of, are the Republicans who are denying science, not at the higher levels, but the average person who shows up and says, yeah, I'm going to vote for George W. Bush, are those Republicans who are denying science doing so because their low tolerance for ambiguity, their need for certainty, is being exploited by people who are programming their beliefs for them? Or is it because that belief set conforms with their particular neurology or psychology?
I think a lot of the first. I mean, so if you take global warming, if global warming had never been politicized, let's spin out an alternative reality where that never happened.
Right.
It was never seen as threatening to conservative values.
Nobody could make any money off there not being global warming.
Right. I mean, or for some reason, you know, it was just dealt with early and wasn't a big deal. Like, that's what happened with CFCs, chlorofluorocarbons. I mean, we dealt with that one. Ronald Reagan, you know, dealt with that one. And so it didn't end up exploding into this thing like we have now.
Well, the science on that was the ozone hole.
Right.
I mean, that
right.
science was unambiguous.
Yeah, well, this one.
But see, there wasn't.
But it wasn't politicized as much.
It was a little tiny industry.
Yeah,
there were only two
true.
Or three true. Companies in the world that made chlorofluorocarbons.
CFCs.
Yeah, CFCs. in tonnage quantities.
Right.
And so
it was easier.
There wasn't an ExxonMobil to fund, you know, millions of dollars into think tanks.
But if it hadn't played out this way in some world, I don't think conservatives would have had a reason to fight the science. But they might have then gone over and fought over something else, and you might have seen the same kind of traits in that context. So it's both, you know, you need the cultural context in which this becomes an issue, but then you also, you have nature and nurture, essentially.
So really, this is an area where, you know, if you're Frank Luntz, I mean, if you're a political strategist, or for that matter, if you're a corporation and you want to politicize something, you know, those nasty EPA regulations or whatever, so that you can make more money, this is an area where conservative or Republican personality types can be easily manipulated or exploited. What about liberal personality types? Is there a parallel?
Oh, sure. You can trick liberals, no doubt about it. It's actually been done in studies. I mean, you know, liberal emotions, you know, tend towards equality and fairness, you know, and taking care of people who are harmed. So if you find an issue where you're pushing those emotional buttons, but you're using bad information to do it, then you can trick liberals. And so I talk about vaccination as an example of that. And everybody got really into the idea that vaccines were causing an epidemic of autism.
Right.
But the scientific community came in and was like, no, 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 no. And they published epidemiological study after epidemiological study showing in giant populations no relationship. Okay? That was, I think, tailor-made for liberals because it's a big corporation making vaccines. And so we distrust them, equality, right? Because we distrust big corporations. And then harm the children, the innocent.
Right.
Right? So both of our emotions are pushed.
But,
and that sets up a situation that's hard for liberals.
But the vaccine also is protected.
Huh. True. And so then you flip it. And then you flip it. And then so hopefully you kind of get the defense of vaccines back. But, I mean, I'm just saying that issue was straight in the quadrant, essentially, of emotions where you can find liberals getting their emotional buttons pushed.
Right.
Yeah.
So basically both sides have the ability to construct political arguments for things that aren't or shouldn't be or don't need to be political and make them political and then cause people to become firmly entrenched in their belief systems.
Mm-hmm. But they're going to do it differently. They're going to do it, I mean, because of openness, lack thereof. And I say, you know, something like the vaccine tends to be faddish. You know, there's not, it was a big deal about 5 years ago. I mean, to some extent, there's been so much blowback over that that right. now it's, I mean, it's kind of hard to stand up for now. I mean, but look at anti-evolutionism and look at this is over 100 years old. This is a fixture. This doesn't change because people have fixed beliefs about this. And they're going to have them their whole lives. I mean, liberals, we're definitely susceptible to fads, you know, because we're looking for new things all the time.
Right, yeah. Right. So the theory of motivated reasoning, mm-hmm. tell me about this. And what does this have to do with fight or flight?
Oh, well, motivated reasoning is how you handle information that threatens you. And the neuroscience says that our emotions fire first before our conscious self. And the emotions feel a defensive reaction. And so then, depending on how much you know about the issue, you'll retrieve from your memory the arguments that support yourself, your belief. And so, you know, you push someone's buttons and then they start arguing loudly, often emotionally. You can see it in people. You know, you can see when someone's doing this.
Sure.
And they've been attacked and then they're going to give you all the reasons. Sometimes with voice raise, I think there's a lot of this in blogging.
Yeah.
You know, people are just firing off their emotions and they think it's rational. It's not rational. It's not reasoning. So it's all about defending the self. Actually, and I do say that both sides do this. I think that we get some examples of the educated conservative doing this a great deal.
Yeah,
you have to know a lot about the issues to really argue a lot. Yeah,
probably the educated liberals do too.
Yeah, but I don't know any case where you get more educated liberals having more contradiction of science in correlation with education, which you do have with the conservatives, which is I haven't found the parallel for that.
That's the fascinating piece.
Yeah.
That is. Chris Mooney, the book is The Republican Brain. Chris, thanks so much for being with us.
Great to talk with you.
Great talking with you, too. To see this and other Conversations with Great Minds, go to our website at conversationswithgreatminds.com.
We have the studio sound engineer modulating the new microphone. I'm real happy here on Secular Sunday. We'll do a little Fela Kuti and talk maybe with Bill. Don't know. Will Mr. Bill be there? We're looking for Mr. Bill. Mr. Bill, Mr. Bill. Yeah. We'll be right back.
zombie.
Zombie, oh, zombie.
Zombie, not go go unless you tell him to go.
Zombie.
Zombie, not go stop unless you tell him to stop.
Zombie.
Zombie, not go turn unless you tell him to turn.
Zombie.
Zombie, not go think unless you tell him to think.
Zombie.
Zombie, oh, zombie. Zombie, not go stop unless you tell him to stop.
Zombie,
zombie, not go turn unless you tell him to turn.
Zombie,
zombie, not go think unless you tell him to think.
Zombie,
zombie, oh zombie.
Zombie, oh zombie.
Zombie, oh zombie.
Zombie, oh zombie.
Tell him to go straight. La joro jara joro. No break, no jam, no sense. La joro jara joro. Tell him to go kill. La joro jara joro. No break, no jam, no sense. A joro jar, a joro. Tell him to go quench. A joro jar, a joro. No break, no jam, no sense. A joro.
Well, we're still playing around with the microphone right now. Yes, yeah. Bring on Bill, Mr. Bill.
Yo,
Mr. Bill,
Mike.
Can you hear me?
I can't hear you.
Hey, man. That's wonderful. I mean, we're starting to make
growth.
It's like broadcasting out of an African village out here in rural Kansas.
Really?
Do you know about that?
Do you have a lot of tigers?
Well, why don't you? There are.
I mean, like
there
an African village,
tigers,
right?
Yes. Bobcat.
Is that African village just different than tigers? I understand.
Well, are you a lion killer? Are you a lion killer?
Some of them are poachers, and some of them are kind of, you know, more of a threat. You know, it's a different kind of tigers.
Have you been killing any pussy lately?
I haven't killed any pussy lately, but that's okay. I'm not looking to kill any pussy. Pussy typically kills me.
Well, I'm sorry. The Sunday, secular Sunday. You know.
Yeah, today's Sunday. That's right. I'm
trying to be. And we're in Kansas. On the Sabbath. Seventh day of rest. Have you found any rest?
Yeah, I've been taking it pretty easy today, I got to admit. It's been restful. I watched the Chiefs play.
Well, you're not working on your Chiefs war.
Yeah, they won. They pulled one out of their butt again.
They pulled it out of their butt again. Hey, you know, what do you think of this issue? University of Kansas School of Medicine Hospital advertising with the Chiefs and the contract.
It's all for profit.
You know,
so would that surprise you? I mean, we've learned at this point that there's nothing anybody won't do for profit, right?
Yeah, so we're talking about a major hospital.
Won't to make money anymore. If that's what you're asking.
I'm trying to figure out how to make money. Bill, I'm trying to make money. I can't make money. I can't make it.
How?
Yeah, did you know that Frontline PBS documentary is getting ready to do a special on League of Deceit where they lied. Didn't they pay like $700 million for football concussions and head damage? Yes.
Oh right, yeah, I know. These guys are, so many of them are like, they're like, they end up like Muhammad Ali or worse.
You're trying to figure it out. I played high school football and I'm sort of damaged too. You know what I mean?
I'm damaged, but all mine was self-inflicted. I guess theirs is too, man. They're getting paid for it at least, right?
Did you play football?
No. I've been
I didn't think you played football. You inflicted on what? What was it, soccer?
I've inflicted, with different kind of damage than hard physical strikes, although I have done too much labor.
I have been doing a little chemical damage myself for the last year or maybe 50 years. I've been.
Yeah, that's what I'm referring to now, maybe 50 years. Probably laying it off of cigarettes would be a bad idea.
You know, don't you think it's more fun than playing football?
I don't know. What I can do is drink beer and smoke cigarettes and watch football. And then I'm getting a little bit
Watch other guys bash their brains into damaged material, correct?
Right. It's raised on it, man. I kind of like it. It's you know, my team is doing good for once, so hey.
What is your team? The Chiefs?
I guess it's Kansas City, because that's where I've spent the majority of my life. So I associate with the locals here that you know. I've actually worked at Chiefs Stadium in a couple different capacities.
Really? Selling peanuts or what? What were you doing?
You don't want to tell us?
No,
you were very close when you said selling peanuts.
Selling peanuts? Beer?
Oh, heck, you're fast.
Marijuana?
No, I was at one point doing parking out there, and at another point I was doing security. And I actually could have worked last weekend, but I don't like to work at the game, so I like to drink beer.
Mr. Bill was pimping at the tailgaters, right? You know what's going on? You were pimping at the tailgaters. You know, I've looked at them tailgaters through the television cameras, and they look like a bunch of geriatrics.
Heart burned down and
aren't
stuff
they a
like
bunch
that.
Of teabaggers?
No, not really. Yeah, I think there's a lot more, really, when it comes to people, there's a lot more rational people than there are teabaggers. Just the teabaggers have louder voices, that's all.
Than our tailgaters.
You know, those think the rational people are ones that are, like, humble, and they're not, you know, they're the ones that aren't making waves, and it's these crazy fucking shitheads that are out there fucking praising Allah and Jesus and everybody else and raising all the hell and blowing shit up. That's what it is.
Hey, you know, I'm with you 100%.
You really rational business-owning atheists that, you know, carb on shit.
Hey, I got an idea, man. What do you think about, you know who Mary Brownback is? Mary Brownback?
Mary. Vaguely.
Huh?
Yeah, I'm familiar with Mrs. Brownback.
Mrs. Brownback, first lady, right? You know how old she is?
Isn't she in her 60s?
Do you know how old? No, she's not that old, but she should be. Mary Brownback's probably about my age, about in the 50s, maybe early 60s at the most.
50s, yeah.
What if she got pregnant?
I mean, she looks like, I don't know how she looks.
What if Governor Sam knocked her up with his Catholic seed and she got pregnant? It's possible, you know, women at 50 years of age can get pregnant.
They'd have a better chance. I think they'd have a better chance of adopting an African child, something like that.
Well, they've been adopting for a long time, but maybe she got the seed and is about to, you know, the fruit of the womb, you know,
versus fruit of the womb.
How would you protect first come back? If she decided to have an abortion in Kansas, how would you protect her?
How would I protect her if she decided to do that? I think I'd probably call her out.
Well, I'd say we hired. Well, say we hired Mr. Bill to do the close protection work for First Lady Governor Sam Brown, Mrs. Sam Brownback, well, if she decided to have an abortion. Yes, honestly. Please.
That's an assignment that I really hadn't considered.
How much would you take for that? What if I paid? How much money would it take?
That would take a lot of money, man. I mean, how long are we talking? You know, just a week?
Well, no, these abortions are very, you know, one day in, one day out. I mean, it's not very big.
Yeah, long. I know, but to arrange,
4 hours.
Whereas, you know, to arrange everything to where it goes down like that, you know, smoothly, it would take some time,
right.
I think. You couldn't just,
you're,
you know,
right. Yeah,
on their door.
Right. It's not
mean. Who
would
you do that?
No, let's get through and
wait.
Right. This is what I said.
Right.
Good
right.
Shot.
Right. Right.
You're probably going to get there. Yeah. You're getting one, okay? That's what I'm saying.
But you want it, but she
doesn't. Not her. No, not if we're keeping this on the dialogue. We don't go down like that. I would tell the experts that I know.
Right. Here's the deal, Mr. Bill. I've got the perfect solution for her. Call who? You're skipping out. And I think it's your phone, by the way. It's not me.
Not my phone. Of course not.
Your phone. Your phone is skipping out. But I have a perfect idea I'd like to run by you for you and all the listeners who are considering taking First Governor Mary Brownback into the abortion clinic here soon, and many other women who need abortions in Kansas. Are you interested in hearing my suggestion?
Mercifully, sure.
Okay. We're going to cut you out. You know, we're going to cut you out, Mr. Bill. And all the private detectives and bodyguards and everything. You know how we're going to cut out all the cops? Everybody who needs to protect the people going in and out of the abortion clinics in Kansas. You know how we're going to do that? We're going to make bulletproof Kevlar. We're going to make Kevlar burkas. Kevlar bulletproof burkas as our new fundraising goal. So that we may successfully bring women in and out of the clinics without the aids of close protection security. What do you think of that? Bulletproof.
Kevlar burkas. I don't know.
Kevlar.
Wouldn't cause neck problems or anything with it. I'd hate to see.
Well, yeah, class action lawsuit. We're gonna start selling burkas here, but first we're gonna play Fela Kuti, Expensive Shit, and have a great day. I'll be right back with you. Thank you.
And I got you for your band. And I got you for your band. Him go bend the ash, him go shit. Him go come out the way from him shit. Him shit go be the last way him go like to see. Because why you?
Because you said, man.
Because why you?
Because you said, man.
I want a monkey for your band. Him go bend the ash, him go shit. Him go come out the way from him shit. Him shit go be the last way him go like to see. Because why are you?
Because you said so.
Because why are you?
Because you said so.
Oh, put in a woman for your band. Oh, put in a woman for your band. She go bend the ash, she go shit. She go come out the way from she shit. She shit go be the last way she go like to she. Because why are you?
Because she said man.
Because why are you?
Because she said man.
Ocarina man for your band. Ocarina man for your band. Him go bend the ash, him go shit. Him go come out the way from him shit. She go be the last way you go like to see. Because why are you?
Because she said man.
Because why are you?
Because she said man.
Deminana, me a be fella, I be black power man. Me a be fella, I be black power man. I go bend my ass, I go shit. I go come out the way from this shit. This shit could be the last way I go like to see. Love is up for some fools, way I know. Love is up for some stupid people I know. Love is up for some fools, way I know. People where go like to quench your soul. People where go like to quench your soul.
They
gon' use your shit to put you for jail.
we're going to keep rock and rolling here today. We're going to do some more music on Secular Sunday. It's a hell of a day. We have our microphone tuned. We're busy, busy, busy little bees here on Radio Free Kansas. With our hot microphone, after Mr. Bill, what a stunning, stimulating visit we had with Mr. Bill. We've got to do something more than us Flobots. Have you ever heard of the Flobots? Well, you are about to now. There you go. That's Flobots, man, from Mr. Bill. We're trying to
do a big hat tip for Mr. Bill while he's gaming away doing the massacres. Here's a little bit of poetry to kill people with on a Sunday afternoon. Things accomplished. And we'll go into the... Thank you for bearing with us on this audio test today.
Accomplished Facts by Carl Sandburg. Read for LibriVox.org by Alan Drake. Every year, Emily Dickinson sent one friend the first arbutus bud in her garden. In a last will and testament, Andrew Jackson remembered a friend with the gift of George Washington's pocket spyglass. Napoleon, too, in a last testament, mentioned a silver watch taken from the bedroom of Frederick the Great, and passed along this trophy to a particular friend. O. Henry took a blood carnation from his coat lapel and handed it to a country girl starting work in a bean bazaar, and scribbled, "Peach blossoms may or may not stay pink in city dust." So it goes. Some things we buy, some not. Tom Jefferson was proud of his radishes, and Abe Lincoln blackened his own boots, and Bismarck called Berlin a wilderness of brick and newspapers. So it goes. There are accomplished facts. Ride, ride, ride on in the great new blimps. Cross unheard-of oceans. Circle the planet. When you come back, we may sit by five hollyhocks. We may listen to boys fighting for marbles. The grasshopper will look good to us. So it goes. End of poem. This recording is in the public domain.
on the level of our unconsciousness. For example, what does the billboard say? Come and play, come and play. Forget about the movement.
Rage, rage against the machine, brothers and sisters. Rage against the machine, brothers and sisters. Finishing the Secular Sunday episode of Kansas. Here we go. See you later.